Well, hey, good morning, City Light Benson. All right, good to be with you guys today. Happy Super Bowl Sunday. It's going to be a good day. Who you guys got? Pats, Eagles? Oh, Pats. You said Pats. Yes, let's go. Patriots. I think they're taking it today, man. They're taking it today. Tom Brady is going to be solidified. Best quarterback ever. That's what I'm saying. So good to be with you guys, man. My name is Alex. I'm one of the pastors here. And then if you're new or if you're visiting us today, man, we're really glad that you guys are here. We're in week four of this series that we have entitled Dual Citizenship, okay? And in this series, we're looking at this really famous sermon that Jesus gave on a mountainside about 2,000 years ago, okay? And in this sermon, he just kind of lays it out for everyone that's listening. Hey, this is what it looks like to be one of my disciples. This is what it looks like to be a citizen in the kingdom of heaven while still being a citizen here on earth. And so we're gonna go ahead and continue with that series today. And so if you have your Bibles, again, the scripture that was read is Matthew chapter 5. We're going to be looking at verses 21 through 26. And from those verses, I want to preach a message called, "You mad, bro? You mad?" We're talking about anger today, okay? Specifically, how anger manifests itself both outside of us and sort of inside of us. And so that's where we're going today. But before we hop into the text, I want to recap something that Tyler taught just a couple weeks ago. So if you are here, then you know Ty did an amazing job of teaching us why the Old Testament law is still important for us today, right? All those, you know, weird ox laws and ceremonial rituals, right? Even though they might be really weird to us now, they serve to a deeper purpose. They serve to point us to who God is and what he really cares about, right? So that's why the law is so important for us today. But back in Jesus's day, there were these people called the Pharisees, okay? And they were like the professional rule followers, okay? It was their job to make sure that everyone else followed the law, tried their best to follow the law perfectly, right? They're like those people who, when they ride in your car, they just try to make sure you're only listening to K-Love, right? They check all your radio presets. And it's like, is it all positive and encouraging? Is this okay, right? They're those types of people, right? And so on the outside, they look amazing, right? On the outside, you know, they followed all the rules. They looked super clean. But on the inside, their hearts were super far from God. And God's looking at them like, man, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I wanted. Jesus, because of that, Jesus had some really hard words to say to the Pharisees. Sometimes he called these guys whitewashed tombs, okay? And what that is a building that's like white and looks super clean on the outside, right? It looks perfect and sort of put together, but inside, it's a tomb. There's a dead body on the inside. Right? It's like rotting and gross. And he says to the Pharisees, man, if you guys were a cup, if you guys were like this cup, you would look clean and perfect on the outside. You would be so concerned with making the outside clean, but on the inside, you're gross. Like on the inside, man, people, if people were to drink from you, they would just get sick. And Jesus says, you know what, if you would worry about the inside of the cup, the outside would take care of itself. The outside would be fine if you could just clean the inside. Tyler, by the way, says he'll give somebody $5 if they drink a cup of coffee out of that. I don't know what's in there, but, you know, hey, if you need $5, go for it. The point of all this, though, is that Jesus is going to take this same logic, this same way of thinking, and he's going to apply it to the topic of anger today. He's going to say, For some of us in here, you know, you might look really good on the outside. He's going to say, maybe you haven't killed anyone, and that's really good. But if you're holding on right now to anger and bitterness in your heart, if you're unwilling to forgive people who have wronged you, if you're holding grudges and you have this whole list of people that you want to get back with and get even with, he's going to say, man, you might look really clean on the outside, but the inside of the cup is dirty. And so City Light, you mad, bro? This morning, are you walking in here with some hurt, some bitterness, some anger, some grudges? Well, me too. But the good news of the gospel this morning is that Jesus can clean the inside of the cup. The good news of our passage this morning is that Jesus is going to actually show us how to deal with righteous anger, unrighteous anger, and then other people's anger. Okay, that's my outline for us this morning. We're going to look at righteous anger. We're going to look at unrighteous anger. And then we're going to look at how do we deal with other people's anger. So point number one, righteous anger. So I want to start this off just by saying there are some things in life that you should get mad at, right? Not all anger is bad. Righteous anger simply means getting angry at the right things, okay? So there are some things in this life that you should get angry about. In fact, anger in its purest form is good, right? Anger in its purest form is simply love in action, coming to the defense of that which is loved, okay? It's energy aroused in defense of something good and released against something evil, right? We get angry when we see someone or something we love threatened, right? And our anger actually goes and propels us to protect them. And so it's actually sinful for some of us in this room. It's actually sinful for us never to get angry, right? There are things that we should get angry about. It's a sin to never, ever be angry. You know how I know that? Because Jesus, who was perfect, got angry, right? In John chapter 2, Jesus gets really mad because he walks into the temple and he sees all these merchants, these money changers, taking advantage of the people of God. They're jacking up prices and making a killing off of the people of God's worship services. And he kind of sees what's going on and he goes, okay, I'm going to be right back. He goes over here and he makes a whip. He like fashions a whip out of some cords and comes back in and sends these grown men who are making a lot of money running for their lives. Okay, he takes this whip and he goes to work, whipping people, sending them running everywhere, right? That's kind of different from the Jesus that a lot of us have in our mind, right? Like the white guy with blonde feathered hair who's holding a lamb, you know, that one just petting it, never threatened anybody, right? That is not the Jesus of the Bible, right? He gets angry. He made a whip, right? It's kind of crazy. I've never done that, right? Mark chapter 3, Jesus gets angry again at the religious leaders because they're exploiting this poor man's disease as a way to try to get Jesus in trouble. They see this man who's sick, and they say, okay, well, let's try to trap Jesus, see if he'll heal this guy, and then we can get him in trouble for trying to heal on the Sabbath. And Jesus sees that and gets angry at what they're doing. In John chapter 11, he gets angry at death, at the tomb of Lazarus. And why is this? Why does Jesus get angry all the time? Because he's a man of love, okay? Jesus gets angry because he's a man of love. He saw that which he loved threatened, and his anger actually propelled him to do something about it, to come to the defense of the thing that he loves, right? In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, Paul tells us, be angry and do not sin. And Jesus carried that out perfectly. So we know that there's righteous anger because Jesus gets angry. Excuse me. But not only that, God the Father also gets angry, right? We see in Exodus chapter 34, right? Moses comes before God and he says, man, God, I want to see you. I want to know you. I want to experience your glory. And you remember this? God says, okay, I'm going to put you in this like little cleft in the rock. I'm going to pass by you. And when God does, he says his name, right? He says, this is who I am, Moses. He says, I'm the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, right? It's one of God's defining attributes. He gets angry, right? He's slow to anger, but he does get angry. Why? Because he's a God of love, right? He gets angry at the cancer of sin that is destroying his creation that he loves very deeply, right? And there's some people in our culture that would say, well, I don't believe of a God of anger. I don't believe in a God of anger or a God of wrath. This was one of the things that actually turned Oprah away from the Christian faith, where she's like, I just don't believe in this God who gets angry, right? I believe in a God of love. But the thing is, you can't have a God of love if you have a God who never gets angry. You can't have it. Like, if you're indifferent to the things that you love when they're threatened, you don't really love it. Let me give you an example. So, ladies, you know when you first start dating a guy, like the games that you play with him? You know the games that I'm talking about, fellas? Listen, I have confirmed with my wife, they do in fact play games with us, okay? When they first start dating, you're not crazy. She's doing some things to test you, okay? So you know how on that first date, right, it kind of maybe looks like she's texting another guy, or you'll text her and it'll take her like 3 days to respond. Did you know that there's thought that goes into that? Like they're actually planning some things. And what I learned from my wife is that one of two things could be happening. Okay, number one is, I mean, she's actually not that into you, and she just doesn't know how to tell you that. That could be the first thing that's actually happening. But the second thing that could be happening is she's trying to figure out if you care. She's trying to figure out if you're a little bit jealous for her time. She's trying to figure out, okay, does he care that I'm talking to another guy, that there could be this threatening other person to our relationship? Like, does he actually care? And she doesn't want you to get all, you know, crazy stalker jealous, right? That could get awkward. Don't do that. But she wants to know, man, is he a little bit jealous for me? Does he care? Because we want to be with someone who does, right? Parents, you guys are the same way, right? Don't you get angry if you see someone threatening your kid? You know, think back to the first time you saw them playing in the street and they almost get hit by a car, right? Or the first time they come home with a black eye. I bet you want to hurt somebody bad, right? And it's because you love them. Right? It's that simple, right? There are things that should make us angry, right? Injustice should make us angry. Abuse should make us furious, right? Racism should make us livid. The mistreatment of others should make us so, so angry, right? To quote a man named John Chrysostom, he says, "He who is angry without cause sins. And he who is angry, and he who is not angry when there is cause, sins. For unreasonable patience is the hotbed of many vices. It fosters negligence and incites not only the wicked, but the good to do wrong." Unreasonable patience, guys, leads us to sin, right? There's actually a time when you should say enough is enough. And anger, most of the time, is the catalyst that gets us there. So let me ask you a question. Is there something happening in your life right now that you should be angry about, but you're not? You know, is there injustice or sin in the world that's happening, and it just does not bother you? You're being unreasonably tolerant. And so let me just say it in kind of an explicit way, man. If that's you, that's sinful, right? That is sin. Anger is often a really good thing. But some of you guys might say, well, Alex, first off, you're taking a while to get to the text that was read today, so there's that. But secondly, if anger is basically a good thing, why does it seem like Jesus is kind of saying the opposite in Matthew chapter 5? Well, that's a great question, and we're going to get there. But just to recap very quickly, we see that there is such a thing as righteous anger because Jesus gets angry, God the Father gets angry, and Paul tells us to be angry and do not sin. So there is such a thing as righteous anger, but what Jesus is talking about in Matthew chapter 5 is unrighteous anger, which is getting angry for the wrong reasons, which is what I tend to find more often in myself than righteous anger. So let's look at this text. So point number one, righteous anger. Number two, we're going to look at unrighteous anger. Okay, verse 21 says this: "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and 'Everyone who murders will be liable to judgment.' But I say to you," see, Jesus is endorsing the Old Testament here, okay? He's saying, you have heard that it was said to those of old, right? He's referring to the Mosaic Law, like to the Ten Commandments. And he starts with the one that most people everywhere agree with, and the one that most people think that they have kept, which is, "Thou shalt not murder." But Jesus is about to challenge their interpretation of sort of the Old Testament law. See, Jesus is about to challenge our way of thinking, which is God just cares about the outward expression of sins. But Jesus is going to say, no, there's a deeper meaning to this text. And the point is that God cares about the inside of the cup. All right? God doesn't just want us to not be people who kill people, but there's actually a heart problem that Jesus is going to address. He says God wants inward transformation, not just outward behavior. And so he says this: "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and 'Everyone who murders will be liable to judgment.' But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment." Wait, did Jesus just say that the person who's angry with his brother and the person who murders someone is going to get the same punishment? This judgment thing? Is that what Jesus just said? Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it. It looks like Jesus just said, man, that the person who is angry with his brother is getting judgment. The person who murders gets judgment. Why is that? Well, the truth is that murder is just the outward manifestation of a heart that is angry. Right? God is saying, I'm going to hold you responsible, not only for what's happening on the outside of the cup, but what's going on the inside too. That matters to me. I'm not just going to judge you for what you do with your hands, but also the posture of your heart. And so then he goes on to kind of elaborate on this in verse 22. Okay, it says this: whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. Okay, and that word insult, like it gets literally translated as empty-headed. Okay, so it'd be the equivalent of, in our culture, calling somebody stupid or calling someone an idiot, right? It's looking at someone's cognitive capabilities and declaring that they are inferior to you, right? It's looking at what they do and saying, man, that is so stupid, or watching them do something and saying, what an idiot, what a moron, right? And this is the reason why we know that this is not righteous anger is because it's not about protecting someone you love. Right? It's not about that. It's about building yourself up and making you feel better about you by looking at how badly someone else is doing. And Jesus says, man, if that's in your heart, that's sinful. If that's in your heart, that is wicked. That is deserving of judgment. That is corrupted, and that is unrighteous anger. If you can look at someone and go, man, that guy's just an idiot. You've got a problem in your heart. And then he goes on to say, whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. And again, that word fool, it isn't. Now, this one isn't necessarily talking about a kind of cognitive capabilities. It isn't talking about your IQ test. But the word fool, it translates to like looking down on someone, to looking at other people with contempt. Okay, and that word contempt just means I'm better than you are. Okay, that word contempt means you're looking at other people and you're like, dude, you don't even deserve to breathe the same air that I'm breathing. Okay, you're an incompetent moron, right? That's what this word contempt means. It's that I am so far and away superior to you because of either what you've done or what I've witnessed you do, and I'm just better than you are. And Jesus says the person who murders someone in cold blood and the person who degrades his brother, either to their face or behind closed doors, the person who murders someone, the person who slanders and has a heart full of hatred, have the same root issue. It's just playing itself out differently in their lives. Right? The actual committing of murder is only the outward manifestation of a heart that's given itself over to anger, bitterness, and contemptment. Okay? He says, again, but it's the same root issue. Right? It's the same heart that is driving all of these things. The cup is dirty. The inside of the cup is messed up. And I know for some of us in this room, man, we're angry. Right? We are angry because, you know, for some of us, man, the person or the thing that we love the most, it's ourselves. And the reason why we get angry all the time is because we don't feel like we get the respect that we deserve from our job or from our kids or from our boss or from our spouse. And so we'll lash out at people because the thing that we have to defend, the thing that we're most in love with is ourselves. For others of us in this room, man, we're angry because we're just wounded, right? And anger is all we got, right? It's the natural response of what's happened to me, of what's been done to us. And if that's you, man, I'm right there with you, okay? You've got your stuff. I've got mine. You know, for me, I always go back and I think to this time kind of in my childhood, and I think of this one particular person who, you know, like they were, you know, they're supposed to be there for me. Right? They were supposed to protect me and love me, man. And they didn't. Instead, they just added scars and they added wounds. And every day, man, I was told how worthless I was, and how I would never amount to anything, and how I was stupid. And I spent most of my life and my days growing up feeling like I didn't really matter to anyone. And all that stuff, all that pain, all that shame, all that added up, and all I found was that I was very, very angry. And you know, you try not to think about it, right? You know, you try to kind of block it out of your head. And so, you know, but you go to sleep tonight, and kind of there it is. Right, there's the anger that comes along with it when you think about them and what they did, and you know, maybe maybe months go by, maybe some years go by, and you know, you kind of don't think about it, you kind of suppress it a little bit, but then, you know, you see something on Facebook, or you see a picture, or someone brings them up in conversation, and all that anger and that hate and that bitterness, it comes flooding back, and you just want them to feel what you felt. You know, you're angry. And I get it, man. I understand why Jesus lumps anger and murder together. I mean, I've thought about it, you know? You know, I thought, man, I know where this person's going to be. I know sort of their schedule. I could get one of my friend's hunting rifles. I could set up. I could be in a place where they would never see it coming. I want you guys to know this, though. I didn't do it, okay? Just know that. Like, I don't need you to actually go to the police and be like, Pastor Alex has something he needs to confess to you. It's important to me that you know I didn't do it. I have, however, sat in my car and thought about it. I know you ain't the only one, okay? You know, we got some Pharisees up in here. Right? Don't tell me I'm the only one that's only sat in my car and planned murder. I know I'm not, but all right. But what I've realized, man, is that this person that I'm thinking of from my past, right, they win, right? They win. They will continue to destroy my life. If I hold on to that anger, if I hold on to that bitterness. Have you guys ever heard this one? Holding on to anger is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Right? The only person that it's affecting is you. Right? There's all kinds of research out there that says, you know, anger is far worse for your body than stress, sorrow, anxiety, and fear. Nothing sets you up for cardiovascular disease and heart attacks like anger does. Not only that, but harboring bitterness and anger makes you skeptical and prejudiced of an entire demographic of people, of the entire demographic of people that have harmed you. So, for example, if you're, you know, a minority in this room and you've experienced racism and hurt from white people, if you hold on to that anger, if you hold on to that bitterness towards them, you're going to be so much more skeptical of white people in general. You're just not going to trust them. And you're going to miss out on some relationships with some incredible people, right? If you're in this room and you've experienced wounds from a pastor or from a church, and you just hold on to that with your entire being, man, it's just going to make you skeptical of churches and pastors forever. You're just going to go, man, they're all the same. And you're going to miss out on something incredible that God would have for you. Right, if you just hold on to that anger, right? Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry and do not sin. But then he goes on to say, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Right? Paul's saying, be angry, but don't hold on to it because it's going to kill you. Don't let it fester. Don't stoke it, right? Because it's going to ruin your life. See, Jesus calls us to let go of our anger, to forgive, right? But there's a problem, guys. We're never going to be able to forgive someone that we feel superior to, right? Like, remember contempt, I'm better than you are. And so if you feel superior to the person that has wronged you, you'll never be able to forgive them because you're going to play that moment over and over again in your mind. And you're going to go, I would have never done that to someone. I've never acted like you did. I can't believe you did that to me. So, like, I can't do it. And if you feel superior to them, there's no way you will actually be able to forgive them. We need the humility and the affirmation that comes from the gospel if we ever want the power to forgive. This is what I mean by that. See, the gospel tells me that I deserve hell. Because of what I've done to God, I deserve hell. Because of my sin, because of my rebellion against him, Jesus Christ had to die on the cross. I deserve hell just like that person who hurt me deserves hell. But because of what Jesus has done for me, when God looks at me, he sees an absolute beauty. Because of what Christ has done on the cross, when God looks at me, he sees the perfection of Jesus. See, the gospel actually takes me down into the dirt and says that I deserve hell. But then it lifts me up into the heavens and says, because of what Christ has done for you, you're a child of God. It's amazing. We actually need the humility and the affirmation that comes from the gospel if we ever want the power to forgive. And so I know that for some of us in this room, though, you know, we're hurting, man. We're angry. We're bitter. And we think, you know, because of what's been done to me, I can never, ever forgive this person. And just know that, number one, forgiving doesn't always mean forgetting. Right? Forgiving doesn't mean that everything has to go back to the way it was. It doesn't mean that you have to, you know, be reconciled exactly like how things were before, right? If he's hitting you, right? If you're getting abused, get out. Get help. Come talk to us. We will help you. It does not mean that everything needs to go back to exactly how it was, but forgiveness, what it is taking that person who's hurt you off of your hook, and it's putting them on God's, right? It's saying, God, I trust you that you're the king of the universe, that you saw what happened to me, and that you're going to do what needs to be done, right? Forgiving is trusting that the God of the universe doesn't need your help in administering justice. Right? Forgiveness is freeing you up so you don't have to carry that anger, that weight around with you every more. You can give it to Jesus. And you can trust that he's going to do what needs to be done. Right? So the beautiful thing, right, is when we give our anger to Jesus, man, it frees us up so we don't have to be controlled anymore. We don't have to be weighed down by our past. We don't need to be in bondage and in shame. We can live in freedom. So City Light, let me ask you, is there anger in your heart right now? Who are you murdering in your mind? Can I plead with you to give that to Jesus? He can carry it better than you can. You weren't meant to lug that around with you. Jesus wants to free you of that. You can trust him, and you can walk in freedom. So guys, we've learned about righteous anger. We've learned about unrighteous anger, and now finally, we're going to transition to the last point here. Jesus is going to teach us, what do we do with other people's anger? Right? What do we do when somebody's angry with us? Let's look at verse 23. It says this. So if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So guys, something that blew me away about this text is Jesus doesn't say, okay, if you're in church and you remember that you have something against your brother, go and take care of that. No, no, he says, if you're in church and you remember that your brother actually has something against you, leave church and go and handle that. And right, and what's crazy about this text is Jesus is probably doing this teaching in a town called Galilee, and the altar that he's referring to there would have been an altar in Jerusalem where worshipers from Galilee would go. They would have to travel somewhere around 80 miles. They'd have to take a smelly donkey on the road with them, travel some on some busted roads with some flip-flops, you know? Like, it's just not a great trip. And Jesus says, okay, if you go on this trip, you get to the altar, and you remember that Joe back home has something against you, saddle up the donkey again, go back and take care of it, even if you're not the one who's mad, right? Even if you're not the one who's angry. And guys, I got to tell you what, this passage bothers me, okay? I hate this passage, to be completely real, right? If someone is mad at me, you know, and they're harboring bitterness and anger against me, I just want to let them. You know, I'll kind of do some heart work and see, you know, am I carrying any of this stuff around too? And if I go, no, okay, I'm good, then that person is angry at me. I just want to let them be angry, right? I don't want to go and initiate with them. But Jesus says, if you've received my forgiveness, if you have received my grace, if you've been transformed by my gospel, then I want to move you from someone who not only harbors anger, but someone who's an agent of reconciliation, someone who restores broken relationships. And I'm like, dang it, man. Really, Jesus? That's what you want to do right now? Because, I mean, when I put myself in this story, right, and I think that, you know, if I think I'm the guy who's at the altar and Jesus says, hey, you got to go and make things right with your brother, I want to turn around and look at Jesus and say, man, but I've got things against him too. You know, I've got some stuff here too, but I've let that go. I've forgiven him. If he's still angry at me, that's fine. I'm over it. Like, he can kick rocks. I don't care. Like, that's his problem, not mine. But as Christians, God says, no, no, no. I've lavished this insane amount of grace on you, this forgiveness on you. And so Jesus wants us to be these people who, again, not only just harbor bitterness and anger in our hearts and don't do that, but actually become agents of reconciliation, people who bring healing. But for me, the reason why I don't want to do it, the reason that why this text bothers me so much, man, is honestly because I'm scared, right? Like, I think, what if I go over there and apologize and they still reject me, right? And, you know, or what if I go over there and stick my neck out and try to own everything I can and they just, like, chop my head off, you know? It's really easy for me to actually talk myself out of following these commands that Jesus gives us. But the thing is, Jesus is really serious about broken relationships, about fractured relationships, man. And he just gives us another point, another story to actually drive this point home. All right, look at verse 25. It says this: come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly, I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. So again, in this story, you have an accuser, someone who is angry with you. And Jesus says, do everything you can to come to terms with them. Right, the story that Jesus uses is a little different. Like, there's a little more stress in this situation because, you know, this person can actually throw you in jail, but his point is still the same. It's do everything you can to fix relationships because they matter to God. And see, another kind of point of this parable too is, man, if you wait too long, if you're just kind of lackadaisical in this process, that relationship's going to hit a point of no return. Right? If you just wait too long, eventually that person hands you over to the judge and the judge to the guard, and then you get put in prison. Like, that relationship is just done. Right? And Jesus is saying, no. I want you to actually pursue this. I want you to make the first move. So, City Light, who is the accuser in your life? Who has something against you? Because, you know, you might have actually forgiven this person years and years ago. There might not be any hate, there might not be any bitterness or anger in your heart, but Jesus is saying, okay, if you've forgiven them, then you make the first move. If you've forgiven them, then you go first. Because as Christians, we're called to imitate Jesus, who made the first move, who stepped out of heaven, who initiated with us when he didn't do anything wrong, right? He didn't have anything, he didn't owe us anything, he didn't need to come to us. Right? He tasted death, he was tortured, he was crucified so that we might be reconciled and have a relationship to him. And he wasn't obligated to do any of it. So as his followers, and we're called to do the same thing, to take the first step and initiate with people. And even if they reject us, you know, that shouldn't surprise us too much, right? Because that's what happened to Jesus. Right? He initiated with us, he came down and we nailed him to a cross. But his initiating love for me should fuel my initiating love for others. So, City Light, are you mad, bro? Are you full of anger this morning? And again, if you are, there are absolutely some things that you should be angry about, right? We've been made in the image of God, so sin should make us angry, injustice should make us angry. But far too often, man, I feel myself getting angry about the wrong things, and I'm unable to let go of the anger that I need to, and as a result, I end up murdering people in my mind and have these fractured relationships here on earth. But City Light, Jesus wants to clean the inside of the cup. Today, Jesus wants to free you from your past. Jesus wants to break the chains of what other people have done to you. You don't need to be full of rage. You don't need to be full of anger. Jesus came to change us from the inside out. He came to free you of bitterness and hate, to transform not just your outward behaviors, but to transform your heart. He can make you into a new person. You don't have to hold on to it. So this morning, man, I just want to challenge anyone in the room. Man, if you're holding on to hate, if you're holding on to anger, if you're holding on to bitterness, if you're drinking that poison yourself, would you commit those people to the Lord? Would you give that over to Jesus? Would you give him the hate? Would you give him the anger and say, God, take this from me. I can't carry it anymore, and I wasn't supposed to. Because he wants to give you freedom today. He doesn't want you chained down to that stuff. So, City Light, could you imagine if we were a community if we were a people that wasn't like chained to our anger, if we were people that were quick to initiate, quick to forgive. And something that I need to tell you about forgiveness is it's really hard, right? It's not something that's just easy and it just goes away and everything's perfect, right? You've forgiven somebody one time and you never have to do it again, right? There's going to be times when you think about that person and that anger and that bitterness and that hate comes back, and you got to do it again. You got to give it to the Lord because he doesn't want you to carry that. He doesn't want you to walk in that. And there's nothing wrong with you if those feelings come back. You just have to give it to Jesus again. And he wants to make us that kind of community, the kind of people that are quick to initiate when we think somebody has something against us. Could you imagine if we were people that didn't just kind of look good on the outside and didn't kill anybody, but we were actually clean on the inside as well? We weren't harboring hate. We weren't harboring anger. We weren't harboring bitterness. City Light, it's possible to be free of the wounds that we carry. It's possible to be a people that trust God to administer justice so we don't have to act on our own behalf. City Light, it's possible for us because, man, Jesus Christ has transformed us. His work on the cross has redeemed us, and he wants to clean you and free you from your anger today. Would you trust him to do that?